Welcome to Three in the Key.
We had a discussion about so-called Hacker Shack, and I know we sent a release out already. We adopted a new rule there. I would say it's not everything that some people were looking for us to do, and it was a compromise.
Bringing you in-depth basketball analysis and interviews from the Great White North.
Well, now that we got KD, I can say it. They were the best team in the playoffs. They should have won a championship.
With your hosts, Elias Elzane, Will Macklin, and Dave the Professor Tripp.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Three in the Key. Elias Elzane alongside Will Macklin.
And only Will Macklin.
That's it for this week.
It's two in the key.
Two in the key. We've kicked Dave off the show.
Yeah, we decided as a group, as a whole.
Yeah.
Not a big fan.
No, not a big fan of Dave Tripp. So you're out of here.
Well, I mean, he did get that review on iTunes to raise his basketball IQ,
and so,
we gave him a cutoff.
We told him if you weren't going to raise it, you're going to be off the show.
Yeah.
So please send us your applications and resumes.
We are looking. So we need a third key, I guess.
Yeah, we need a third person to fill in the three in the key.
That's right.
Because we don't want to change it to two in the key.
No, God, no. That doesn't make any sense. Because I don't think that's the rule. The idea of the name was the three in the key was like the three of us and then the rule of having that. Yeah,
that's
so
right.
Two of the key, that would change the game of basketball.
That would. We're just kidding. Dave's away this week, out on the cottage or something like that.
I don't know. It's summer, man. And then next week he'll be gone too.
Yeah, next week he'll be in the States.
Yeah,
in DC.
Washington, D.C.
So he's just leaving us out to dry.
Hopefully we can do a phone call, though. That'd be amazing. He can give us his John Wall presentation or something like that. It's Kentucky Wizard, so...
Yeah, that would be interesting. We'll see. Dave, we're looking out for you.
Yeah, definitely. Miss you.
Lots going on in the basketball world, as usual. Unfortunate news, sad news. We lost a legend in the NBA world. Nate Thurman passed away of leukemia. He played with the Warriors, the Bulls, and Cavs in his career.
Mm-hmm.
7-time All-Star, 5-time All-Defensive Team. His number 42 is retired by both the Warriors and the Cavs. He was the first player with a quadruple double in his debut with the Bulls back
Crazy.
In 1974, before we were both alive.
Yeah, of course.
So he had 22 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists, and 12 block shots. It was his debut with the Bulls, and what a debut it was, right?
Amazing, man. And, like, if there was no Jordan, you know, this guy would be the best Bull ever, you know? Or even, like, with Warriors, too, you know? Like, he was just...
Oh, a legendary player. 1 of 5 in NBA history to average at least 15 boards per game in his career. 1 of 5 players in the history to average at least 20 boards per game during a season. And 1 of 4 players in NBA history to record 40 or more rebounds in a game. One of the first defensive centers ever in the NBA.
Yeah, that he changed the game because that's what they went. They went big man like that, and he was...
He was
huge
one of
that.
The first back then, you know, the Kareems and the Wilts and the Bill Russell.
Yeah, he kind of paved the way for them.
Well, he was there at the same time and later
on. Well, later on, yeah, I guess, obviously. But, like, I mean, for them to come in after and see what he did and then kind of just control, like, the quadruple-double? First time? I never saw that.
Yeah, he was the first guy, and it's only been done 3 other times, right? Alvin Robertson, Hakeem Olajuwon, and David Robinson. Those are the other 3 to do it.
Nope.
3 big men, obviously.
12 blocks in one game is just...
That's one thing. Are we ever going to see a quadruple-double again? Like, is someone in today's NBA
could
pull it off?
Who do you think they could do it?
You'd have to think a big man because of the block shots or someone that's very good in playing the passing lanes or getting steals. Because the points, rebounds, and assists are pretty much the 3 categories player would do it. But then you got to think about someone who would be able to steal the ball 10 times or block 10 shots. So maybe, I don't know. I want to say randomly Hassan Whiteside could be an option.
Yeah, that'd
because
be cool.
He's had triple-doubles of points, rebounds, and blocks.
Dwight, maybe early Dwight could have had a chance.
Early Dwight would have been good. I think Dwight is rejuvenated. I think he could do something maybe.
Yeah.
LeBron James is another name for sure.
Oh, definitely. It's surprising actually he hasn't almost, you know, like...
Yeah, it's the steals and blocks. I don't know if a guy, like a wing player, I know LeBron's obviously physically gifted and he's huge, but could he get 10 blocks in a game? That's tough.
Yeah, he gets 3,
he'd have
4,
to play against, like, you know, like a Spud Webb or a Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah, always blocking.
Yeah. So that would that would be hard. Remember, you can always get a hold of us by email at the3inthekey@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at 3 in the Key. Follow on Twitter at BasketPod, on Instagram at the3inthekey. And you can listen to each episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. And make sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. And you can check our website and find all of our links to all of our pages.
Yeah, we are stacked.
At 3, the number 3, in the key.ca. On today's program, we talk with Kisam Ramirez of SB's Nation's Pounding the Rock to discuss the Spurs offseason. And now that the news that Tim Duncan has officially retired, what a legend.
Yeah.
One of the greats of all time. Obviously, in my book at least, the greatest power forward of all time.
I definitely hated
the Spurs growing up.
Me too.
I found them to be so boring,
you know?
But they got it done. They were consistent.
Fundamental was the perfect word for Duncan, right?
Yeah, I hate them for the simple fact that I'm a Laker fan. That's pretty much it. But yeah, I respect them. And now he built that tradition.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan, he came in. He helped David Robinson at the end of his career win 2 championships. And he went on to win 3 more. And the only guy to start and win championships in 3 different decades?
With the same team? And it's it's amazing.
And now he's paved the way for guys that came after him. I know Ginobili and Parker have been there for a while, but he paved it for them. And then Kawhi, and he won a championship with Kawhi.
Aldridge,
the last year that he was there. And now they got Gasol. But we'll talk about all that and more. Also, early look at next season for the Spurs with Mr. Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock.
Yeah, that's SB Nation. Yeah, Pounding the Rock is the affiliate for the Spurs, and he's a big writer for there. And we had it was similar to what we had last week with Andy being the affiliate with Golden State of Mind for the Warriors.
That's right. But we start. There's a couple of things we want to get to, but Summer League is in play. We'll get to that a little later. Iguodala had some comments on a radio station that we might dig into a bit. But first, we're going to start with the new Hack-A-Shaq rule changes. Now, this has been in discussion all year because it's been used way more than ever.
Yes.
In today's game.
Especially on Drummond.
Drummond and Dwight were probably the
DeAndre.
Guys. And DeAndre Jordan were probably the 3 guys that was used on the most because they are the worst free throw shooters in the NBA.
Definitely.
Now, I get it that the NBA wanted to change the rule because it was slowing down the game and it's boring for the casual fan. And it might even be a little boring for the hardcore NBA fan because, okay, they're going to foul. We got to wait. Goes to the line. He has to take a free throw. Obviously, he's going to miss. It might be an air ball wide left or wide right.
Well, Drummond for sure.
Yeah, or DeAndre as
well. Yeah, definitely. We've seen it.
But actually, Drummond has said something this week that he's found something that makes his free throw shooting better. I wonder if it's the underhand.
Yeah, please be the granny shot, man.
Yeah.
Who threw it up in Summer League? Someone did it in Summer League.
Someone did do it in Summer League. I don't know his name.
I forget who it was.
But so for people that don't know, the Hack-A-Shaq rule is so you find the poorest free throw shooter on the team and you literally just go and slap him and foul him right in open play and send him to the line. So there's been some changes. So the current rule for, they call it away from the play fouls, they're applicable to the last 2 minutes of the fourth period, so the fourth quarter, and the last 2 minutes of any overtime.
Right.
And the team is awarded the free throws and retains possession of the ball, and it will be extended to the last minute of the last 2 minutes of each period. And then now for inbound situations, a defensive foul at any point during the game that occurs before the ball is released by the inbounder.
Mm-hmm.
It will be administrated in the same fashion as an away-from-the-play foul committed during the last 2 minutes of any period. So one free throw and possession of the ball.
Yeah.
The flagrant foul rules will be used to protect against any dangerous or, excessive hard fouls. This will be used if a player jumps on an opponent's back to commit a deliberate foul. You know how they were at the free throw line? One guy shoots a free throw, but you had a poor free throw shooter there. You jump on the back of him, so it's a foul, and that guy has to go to the line
now.
So previously, these types were subject to being called flagrant foul, but were not automatic, and now they will be. What are your thoughts on the changes?
I think it's okay. I mean, it makes sense to adapt your game. I mean, the NHL did this. They had to do it. They had to get away with they had to take away the 2-line pass. They wanted to get away with. They want to stop ties, so they started the penalty shots. They've talked about doing that with with gear, you know, with getting pads smaller and all. You know, they do that all the time, trying to make what you said with a casual fan getting involved. So it makes sense. Like, I think there is a problem with the Hack-a-Shaq rule. I know a lot of people say it's like, well, just get your man shooting and practicing.
Yeah, no, I'm with that.
Yeah.
I'm with that point. Like, if it's a strategy. Basketball is strategy. It's a game of strategy at the end of the day. So you want to out... At the end, you're there to win the game. No matter how you do it, you're there to win. And if this helps you win, then you do it. You know, it was first really started by Popovich in the early 2000s.
With you.
Not with me, but with Shaq.
with your Lakers.
Yeah, that's right. And that's when we first saw it. Then it evolved. Well, it kept going with Shaq until the end of his career. And
that's
then you
why
have
we
all
call
these,
it the Hack-a-Shaq.
Yeah, and you have all these big men now that can't shoot free throws, but you gotta go to the gym. It's what you're paying millions and millions of dollars for get your free throw shooting up.
Yeah.
And you just gotta do it. You gotta get better, and it's part of the game. But these rules will help. It will keep them down, I think, or bring the number of away from the ball fouls down, because we had such a huge spike in the NBA this year. Mm-hmm. So it'll help in that term, but it doesn't take it out completely, because it is still a strategy and it can bring you back into games. Well, right, when these guys are missing free throws and you're making buckets at the other end of the floor,
right?
So,
well, I mean, it's only the last 2 minutes, right?
Exactly. So that's the last 2 minutes of each quarter now.
Oh yeah, before it was just it was supposed to be the second and the fourth, right? Yeah, I think it's okay. Would you prefer? I honestly prefer it the whole game, if anything, because that would be amazing. But I understand what they're trying to do with the casual fan. Like, a lot of stoppages suck. I mean, that's why the big complaint is about football, you know. But I think, like, I don't mind it so much, especially at the end of a game. I like that drama. I like as a sports fan, I like those moments being consumed and I'm living in it. You know, I like that. Like, I love that. Last pass for the touchdown. I love the home run, bottom of the ninth, that type of stuff. And the last shot in basketball is that. And sometimes it's field goal, free throws. You know, and I don't mind. I mean, when you get a technical, you're gonna send your best guy to take the shot, right? Curry's gonna take that shot. You know, it's not. Is that, are you going to take that away? Like, you can't be your best shooter if you're going to go, if it's a technical foul, you know? Like, it's interesting, but I'm for it. I mean, if it's to entertain more for the casual fan, that's what they want, the casual audience. So let's get it in, I guess.
Yeah, at first I thought maybe they were going to scratch it away, the whole thing, like you're not allowed to do it.
Not allowed to foul at all. Don't foul the big man.
Not, yeah, exactly, but then that would give them an advantage because...
Right, well, what's Drummond going to do down there?
Yeah, you only foul him when he's actually going up for the shot, and maybe it's an end one, then he just won free throw, so even if he misses, he already had the 2 points. Yeah. But this, like I said, it just takes away the amount of times that people can do it pretty much and when they can do it.
Yeah.
And also, now you can leave your big man at down the stretch in quarters, and they're there. Like, a DeAndre Jordan's going to help you big time on defense. Dwight Howard, you saw them pull them out.
Yeah.
In games because of that. Now you can.
Well, look at them. Like, I mean, a lot of the big guys are even getting played off the court because of all the teams that are going small ball. Like, look at Golden State. Like, do they actually have like a man who's a big man, like that's relevant, you know, like Zaza, like you tell me.
Yeah, I know. It's
they're getting
it's
totally
different.
Away with it, right? Like they want to go small ball. The rest of the team's like, okay, maybe we have to go small too, you know. And maybe the big man's getting played off. I mean, Dwight's been quiet for years, right? So it's interesting. Like, but we see a dominant big man, Drummond's up there, and DeAndre. But after that, Whiteside. I mean, you named him earlier, but I mean, after that, it's like no one's dominant. Has been dominant in a few years.
That's right. Moving on here, Iguodala made some comments earlier this week.
Yeah, super interesting. Like, I guess, do you think he said that just because?
I think he just said that just to say that. I don't know if he meant it. If they were he said that OKC was the best team in the playoffs and that they should have won the championship. Well, listen, if they were the best team and they should have won a championship, they would have won a championship.
Yeah, there's actually what they do in the NBA. They do a tournament where they find out who the best team is. And Cleveland won it, so they ended up being the best team.
Like, that's right. So I don't get it. Iguodala, I think he was just saying that to try to
make Durant. Well, would he say that if he didn't get Durant?
Yeah, to make Durant transition to the Warriors maybe a little easier. Like, oh, he was on the best team. They should have won, and they didn't. Now he's with us. It's okay. But they won 73 games, and I'm pretty sure they thought they were the best team all year until the final buzzer in Game 7 where they didn't win.
Exactly.
And like you said, the NBA does this, and Cleveland turned out to be the best team, and they finished atop deservingly so.
I mean, it does make me think, like, what that matchup would have been like to see Cleveland versus OKC.
Of course.
That would have been super interesting, and especially coming off a big win in Game 7 off the Warriors, I think that would have been huge momentum, but I still feel like the Cavs would have done it on... I feel like the Cavs matched up better versus the Thunder than they had the Warriors. And
yeah, but the Thunder were really playing very, very good basketball.
I know.
Postseason, and then they lost the Game 5 going back to Golden State. In that Game 6, Klay Thompson was possessed, man.
Yeah, it was over.
He couldn't miss from beyond the arc. He couldn't even miss that night. And then going back, Game 7 away, the momentum is with Golden State, and Curry had a big game in that Game 7 against OKC, and they rounded up. But I think he was just saying that to, you know, throw people off and get people like us talking about it. I don't think there's much...
He's always been like that, though.
...to say about it. I mean, OKC was really good, but they weren't the best, clearly, because they lost. They were playing very good basketball. Like, everyone, after that Game 1... against that San Antonio series, after Game 1, everyone's like, oh. OKC's done, and they came back and they pulled that one off, and they won, and they went to the West Final to play the Warriors, and they had that that big lead. And I don't make much of it.
They didn't really impress me actually against the Mavericks, but then when it got over in San Antonio, that's when the lights went on, and everyone thought it was their year, especially when they were up 3-1, man, like against the Warriors. Like, they thought they were, but like, I can get what he's trying to say, but they had the edge, but they lost. I mean, you could have said that about yourself too, right?
I mean, you could say that about a team maybe if they lost in the finals, if a few...
You could say that about the Warriors.
The plays didn't go their way or a shot didn't fall.
The Raptors, man.
Yeah, but then in the West Final, when you're up 3-1 and then lose, it's the same thing with the Warriors. They were up 3-1 and they lost. But I think he's just saying that to try to ease the transition of Durant into...
Right. No, Golden you're right. State. I think you're right. And I think it will. I mean, he's in, like... oddly comfortable and super, like, already fits in with that team. It's amazing how well he has transitioned into the Oakland unit, because it's been crazy with his interviews and everyone. Like, he's not doing the villain stuff, but he's just the bad guy for what he did, you know?
He will be the villain once the season begins everywhere outside of Golden State, right? Like, outside of Oakland and San Francisco area, he's going to be the villain because he left his team. I think when he goes back to OKC, that game is like he's going to get booed,
right?
Obviously. And every team is going to want to beat the Warriors just because they added Durant and they're the so-called best team. On paper, obviously, you got to give it to them because they added Durant, a former MVP, a four-time scoring champion, a guy that can literally any night give you 50 points. But
it's their season
to lose. I think it's better for the Cavs this way because the target is not so much on them being the defending champions. That I'm not going to say it's going to be easy for them, but people might forget about them because there is the Golden State Warriors and what they've done. So that might even help the Cavs a little more.
So, like, you're going to watch, say, example, are you going to watch League Pass? Do you have League Pass?
Yes, of course.
Do you try and watch every game or, like...
Yeah, every night. Every night I'll watch every game.
But are you going to be more now...
Well, the beauty of it is that the Warriors play so late on the East Coast, right, at 10:30. So
yeah,
there's
but you
only
wake
like
up at
two...
like 4 in the morning every day.
Yeah, but that's fine. I'll take naps like I've been doing for the past couple
years.
Yeah,
I guess it's true.
When they play at that time, there's only like one or two other games at 10:30 or one game that started at 10, so you can bounce back at the commercials easier.
But so who's the team to watch that you watch in the East then? If you're going to watch...
Well, obviously the Raptors, because we're in Canada and it's so important to pay attention to them.
But what about matchups? Like, who would you like to see? I guess Knicks, Bulls.
Yeah, the Knicks, the Bulls. The Bulls now, because with all their moves now, Rondo, Wade coming there, the Knicks being, I guess, relevant again, adding some guys. Yeah, Courtney Lee. They signed Brandon Jennings, who Phil Jackson said should be the sixth man of the year already.
I saw Brandon Jennings on Instagram. He was looking really good.
Yeah. Yeah, the Knicks, the Bulls, everything, man. I watch any game. I watch literally any game.
Aren't even,
the Sixers, I think, are going to be interesting for
yeah,
once.
Yeah, Ben, yeah.
Ben Simmons, if Joel Embiid is healthy and he gets on the court, I want to see what he does.
I'm saying, though, it's like
you're going to be... now.
You just be more geared towards... You're going to want to watch the Warriors the most.
Everyone's going to want to watch the Warriors.
Yeah, do you think that's a problem, though?
No, I think it's good for the NBA.
Yeah, you think they have one team at least to be watched? Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think every team... Well, I watch the Lakers every night they're playing because...
You're
Lakers.
A fan, but
yeah.
but no one like I won't watch the Lakers every night unless they're playing the Warriors.
It happens four times a year.
But like I'll watch them now. Say like I mean we're talking about summer league. We'll probably get into it, but because of Russell and what Ingram has been doing. So, but I get it for you being a fan, but I just think the casual fans going to watch the Warriors and
yeah,
only the Warriors,
the
and
Warriors,
maybe the Cavs occasionally depending on the matchup.
The Warriors, I think, are going to get all the attention they're going to have. The most nationally televised games.
Right.
And everyone's going to want to watch them because they added Durant. Even if they didn't add Durant, everyone would still want to watch the Warriors because it was the Golden State Warriors and what
right.
they've done. They're just coming back off a 73-win season, the most, and they failed to get the title. So everyone would want to see how they're going to bounce back mm-hmm. and how they're going to perform. But now they add Durant. It's like, oh, my God. Yeah, we want to see them now. But now it's like, they're the villain. They went out and added this guy. Everyone wants them to lose. So I think
yeah.
outside of their fans, everyone's going to watch and cheer
yeah,
against
I guess,
them.
I guess that's what they did with Miami too, eh? Like, that's the same thing. But like, if you would say like an underrated League Pass team, you'd watch, who would it be?
Underrated?
Timberwolves, right?
T-Wolves would be a good one, a young team on the come up.
Yeah.
Carl Anthony Towns is solid. Wiggins, of course, a Canadian. Been watching his development the last
yeah,
couple
I
of years.
Yeah, I think that they'll be fun to watch.
They'll be good. I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but I think the Sixers might be all right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, man. Ben Simmons has shown lots of nice
yeah.
and promise, other than his shooting where he's airballed a couple of shots, more than a couple actually in Summer League. So far. I know it's Summer League, but his shooting has been a bit of a problem, but the guy is so big. I think he'll get a lot of buckets around the rim.
Right.
And he crashes the board, so he'll rebound for you on both ends. If Embiid can stay healthy, they have him. Depending what they do with Okafor and Noel, what they turn that into, because I don't think they go to training camp or they start the regular season with all those big men.
Yeah.
Saric coming over, I think he'll give them some outside shooting. They went and got a couple of vets and Bayless and Sergio Rodriguez out from Real Madrid, who was in the NBA
oh,
before.
Yeah. That's right.
So, and Gerald Henderson is signed there. So, they've got some vets now to lead that young team. It's kind of what the Lakers did, with the Lakers maybe a little ahead of them, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can see that.
But
like,
I think,
one signing away, I mean, you one Westbrook away, right?
Yeah, with that young core, I don't think they'll be a championship contender right away with Westbrook, even, because the guys still need time to develop.
It's tough.
But with the vets, and you see these teams who are rebuilding, but I think the Sixers, I think the Utah Jazz are going to be really good. I think they're going to be a team to watch as well.
It's funny with these guys developing, because, I know Dave's not here, so I don't want to slag him too much, but, it's just so obvious how much better NBA players, guys who've been in the league 3-4 years, than these college guys coming in. I mean, don't get me wrong, Ben Simmons has been fun to watch, and so is Ingram, but it's just like the years and that experience, it's just like it means a lot. Like, it's huge. I mean, now with a couple of years with Wiggins and Carl getting a second year in, the Timberwolves will be good, I think.
And with Tom Thibodeau now running the show. And Chris Dunn, who's been really good in Summer League, talking about Summer League. Thon Maker has been impressive.
Exactly.
He's averaging, I think, a double-double.
With the Bucks.
With the Bucks, and a lot of people are still making fun of his age. I think people should move on. Come on.
Yeah, get over it, man.
Yeah, seriously, that's going to... I don't think it affects him, because he doesn't really care. He's there to go to work, to do and to prove these people wrong, but... There's limits to this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Disrespectful.
I think Dave was right when he said it a couple weeks ago, saying it is kind of race related, and it is just people being mad that he did it different than other people, rather than just go to college one and done. And who's to say that's the right way to do it? What he did was just fine. I mean, he did his thing, entered the draft, got drafted, a lottery pick. Imagine . That.
And he's doing very well. He's still very raw, but he could shoot the ball. He blocks shots. He rebounds. And I'm happy for Thon. Obviously, played his high school ball out here in Canada.
Hopefully represents Canada.
No, he's going to represent Australia.
Is he really?
Yep.
Monster. I don't care about him anymore.
No, but speaking of a Canadian, Jamal Murray has been not bad.
Oh, yeah, for...
Chris Dunn, another guy, not Canadian, but he's been impressive in Summer League. The Raptors got hated on there with that bogus call.
I know.
The guy put it, was Tyus Jones that put his leg out, and they're out of the Summer League. I don't know how we're getting upset about that. But yeah, no, yeah. Summer League is for the guys to see
a
that...
Spurs-King game was amazing with overtime.
Yeah, and the Ulis 3 to win it. Yeah. There's been a couple of buzzer beaters. The Summer League has been actually more entertaining to watch than the last
Well, I was telling you, it was so funny
couple.
How different. Like, I was watching highlights of like LeBron's first... LeBron and Dwayne Wade's first Summer League, and there's like nobody there, like maybe just writers and bloggers and such. But then now, if you look at Summer League, people are filling out the it's a T-Mobile.
No, they play at the Cox Pavilion.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
They, you, Thomas and Max.
That's right. But there's people there filling it out. You know, like where there's like half, like not even half. It was like gyms in Orlando. You know, it was just crazy Summer League back in the day.
But it's good. Yeah. Hack-a-Shack, Iggy's Comments, Summer League there for you, a little bit
Wrapped
of that.
Up.
You let us know what you guys think about those rules, and maybe Iggy's Comments have more to say. I think it was just also to get people talking
Definitely.
And think about it. But Summer League comes to an end tomorrow. Tomorrow's the final. There's the semifinal games today.
Oh, yeah, it is a tournament.
And,
right? Yeah,
in Vegas, yeah, so that's that. Next, we talk with Kisam Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock. We get into the Spurs offseason, Tim Duncan, Gasol, the trades that they made. They got rid of Diaw to make the space.
It'll be fun.
And
man.
Boban Marjanovic, they couldn't retain him, so they let him walk. But we'll get into all that with Kisam Ramirez next on 3 in the Key.
I was never good at the flash and dance. I go with what works, and I'm not a high jumper like some of these guys. I'm not a smash like some of these guys, but the fundamentals of the game are what worked for me.
Duncan using the glass as only he can. A signature shot for number 21. You take his greatness for granted because he does it on such a consistent basis, night after night, year after year.
Welcome back to 3 in the Key.
Welcome back inside the Key. Elias Elzain alongside Will Macklin only this week. Dave is away.
But we filled that hole.
We filled that hole with someone from down in San Antonio, and joining us, it's Kisam Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you obviously down in San Antonio, and the biggest news this week is Tim Duncan officially announcing his retirement after a long, illustrious Hall of Fame career, 19 years in the NBA with the San Antonio Spurs, obviously the greatest power forward in my eyes, and I'm pretty sure you can agree, of all time. 5 championships, 3 final MVPs, 2-time NBA MVP. What can you say about the big fundamental?
What can I say? I mean, you can say everything about Tim Duncan, that guy is special. And I know I'm biased because I've lived in San Antonio, born and raised, and he was my childhood hero. But I don't honestly think there's going to be another NBA player quite like him. I mean, to have a guy play with one franchise, one coach for 19 years. I know Kobe did it for 20 years, but he did it for several coaches. So to have that continuity through 2 decades, to have that culture kind of cultivated and kind of developed to where 2014, he was on the fringes of the rotation. He was still a valuable player, and he was willing to subsume his role and be this, like, ridiculous defensive player and leader and mentor even while his knees betrayed him. So there's a lot to be said about Tim Duncan. I'm sure we'll go into it, but man, that guy was everything, and I'm gonna miss him so much.
So you said you tweeted this out, and I think it's still up there. But should there be a statue for Tim for the big fundamental?
I think there should be. I think there should be everything for Tim Duncan. There should be a tree. There should be a statue. There should be a day. There should be just for everything that he's meant to San Antonio, because like he's more than basketball for the city. Like he made a lot of people in the city of San Antonio feel like winners, and he made them feel like they were meant something, and he made all these NBA teams like wish they were the Spurs. And if you think about it, like the Lakers and the Knicks and all these big market teams wishing they were the San Antonio Spurs or in the small market, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I think Tim Duncan, like outside of the Netherlands, and when you look at it in the NBA world, a lot of people don't really look at Tim Duncan as a star, but inside the little niche of San Antonio, he's like a god.
Well, it's a small, it's a small franchise. Oh, not small franchise. It's a small, smaller town to have a like a big league team. And let's get that 21 retired.
So speaking with Kisam Ramirez, obviously of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock out in San Antonio, this guy, 15-time All-Star, Tim Duncan, 71% winning percentage, the best in a 19-year stretch in the NBA history, over 26,000 points, 15,000 rebounds, 3,000 blocks. Like, you can say everything about this guy 15 times, also on the defensive team. But surprisingly, he's never won a Defensive Player of the Year award, which is surprising for how much consistency he's been on both ends of the floor. But I want to ask you, for us people in Canada, even for people out in the States who are not familiar with San Antonio or the state of Texas and don't pay attention too much to those teams, what has he meant to in that community? What has he done off the court that people like us that don't live there don't get to see?
Tim Duncan's been everything to the city. He's kind of a recluse in the sense that we don't see him very often, and I've only seen him outside like once in my life. But he has kind of instilled hope in the minds of San Antonians, and it's like I was saying earlier, like we just feel like winners, and we feel like proud of what he created. And really, the Spurs, Tim Duncan is the Spurs, and that's the only way. Like, he's not the end of the Spurs, but he's so much to it that it just feels like it's over. I know Kawhi Leonard's still there. I know that foundation's still intact and the future's still bright, but Tim Duncan has been everything, and he's transformed the city into something that, like, we never thought. Like, 20 years ago, we were just a small market with, we had really good Mexican food, we had the fiesta, we had everything, but I think Tim Duncan has just made us so much more than that, and I think it's a huge loss, and the city's still in mourning for Tim Duncan. So just to put it in one sentence, I think he's just been everything.
And, well, David Robinson was there, obviously, before he got there, and he was a scoring machine and obviously an all-star and an MVP. But how, when Tim Duncan came, how did that change it with David Robinson? Because just 2 years later, they were NBA champions. Something, you know, David Robinson obviously was a big-time figure in the NBA and
the
big for San Antonio, but it didn't seem like he couldn't get it done. What was it about, I know I'm just keep asking you these questions about Tim Duncan, but what
it's
was
so
it?
It's so important.
Like, he's the last guy, or I don't know, like you said, if we're going to ever see another one, but what stands out to me is this guy played 4 years at Wake Forest and came into the NBA and dominated
Virgin
for
Islands,
so long.
Swimmer.
And a guy, yeah, a swimmer who didn't even want to be an NBA player growing up, only started to play the sport in the ninth grade. But what was it about him that when he came in, it helped David Robinson so much and finally captured that NBA title? Well, two with David Robinson, and then he went on to have five more. But what was it about him that first helped the Admiral?
David Robinson, this was this chiseled, like, superhuman freak, and that he was just an athlete. But I think what prevents him from being one of the all-time greats, because he's going to be one of the top 30 wherever you place David Robinson, 30 greats of all time. But what I think separates him from, like, him and Tim Duncan, I think, is the competitiveness. I mean, I wouldn't call David Robinson soft at all. I mean, he was a competitor, but he didn't have that, like, fearlessness and that, like, Kobe Bryant mentality. Because, I mean, Kobe Bryant even said it a couple days ago in regards to Tim Duncan, that he was like, they don't give Tim Duncan enough credit for being this, like, ridiculous competitor and this guy that really wants to kill you. I mean, he does it in a different way than Kobe, in the sense that he actually doesn't kill you, he kills you softly. And I think in another way, it's very destructive. Like, Draymond Green, the king of trash talk, was like, I don't say anything to that dude because I don't know what to say. He's just quiet and he just destroys me. And Steven Adams, he's really nice to him while he kicks your ass. So it's like, Tim Duncan just has that little it factor that I think only a certain few basketball players have all time. And I think that's what separated him. When you add him to a core that was already pretty good, 150 games a lot, and I think that just led to two championships and obviously the last 20 years.
Just amazing. Now, how important was the relationship with Coach Pop? Because we kind of compare it to almost like what we see in the NFL with Tom Brady and Belichick, to have that relationship and always be that kind of togetherness. And I wanted to ask, like, how important was this, like, to have this coach and player relationship for the Spurs?
Without Pop, I don't think Tim Duncan stays with the Spurs in 2000 when he's considering going to the Orlando Magic. Like, they had a relationship that kind of transcended the usual coach-player relationship, in the sense that it was essentially a basketball marriage. They were together for 20 years. They knew the ins and outs of each other's, like, the way they could basically, at the one point, Pop said that they could just communicate without even looking, without even saying anything. That's how deep they got. And I think Archie Buford on the Vertical podcast a couple days ago, he was talking about how the Spurs blew the free agency meeting back in 2000 with Tim Duncan, and that Pop's sincerity with his relationship with Tim Duncan ultimately saved them. Wow. Like, Tim Duncan really forego a better situation with Orlando, who had cap space, who had the promising future, for a team at San Antonio in that current point was still unsure. David Robinson was on the decline. Mm-hmm. He didn't have as much going for the Spurs as the Magic, and he still chose the Spurs because he just loves Pop. And I think one night, as Archie Buford recalled, he just went over, and I thought this was an amazing story. He went over to David Robinson's house, had dinner, went to Pop's house, and they had this long talk. They cried, they laughed, and then they just started wrestling with each other. And I just thought that was like an amazing story to kind of put everything into perspective, that Coach Pop and Tim Duncan were just something that we'll probably never see again.
Best bromance in basketball.
Yeah, that's a real bromance right there.
It's an amazing relationship to see over the last 19 years, and it's going to be interesting to see how Popovich moves on now to probably Kawhi Leonard, who's the next cornerstone of that franchise, definitely, along with LaMarcus Aldridge, who's a nice piece. Obviously, you have Parker and Ginobili are on the decline. But before we get into all that and what's next for the Spurs, I got to ask you one last question about Duncan. Without being too biased, where does he rank, you think, in the all-time great conversation?
For me, he's top five. I'm putting him behind Jordan, one, LeBron. I'm putting LeBron already, too, and I'm projecting ahead that he's going to have some more championships in the future. Kareem, three, Magic, four, and then Tim Duncan, five. So I think that's where I'm going. I mean, I think the top ten are pretty, you can interchangeable in a sense, but I think Tim Duncan should be anywhere in the top ten, and I wouldn't be mad at you.
Yeah, he is definitely in the conversation.
Well, you're talking to a Kobe fan right here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't put him ahead of Kobe, but Duncan is, as a Laker fan, it was always hard to watch Laker games against Spurs because Duncan was just a beast, and I would just hate those games. But they had, obviously, it was a great rivalry in the playoffs and in the regular season, and obviously they won so many championships, both teams. So it was obviously, for basketball fans, great to see. Now moving on to what the Spurs have done this summer, obviously bringing in Pau Gasol.
Yes.
So how is that addition going to help now with Duncan gone?
Pau Gasol is a great player. I mean, he averaged a double-double, made the All-Star team last year. He has his faults defensively. He hasn't tried or been good at that, so that's a little negative. But I think Pau Gasol is a fine player. I think this addition would have been nice a couple years ago when the league wasn't so skewed towards a three-point ball and small ball. I think he's going to be a liability, and I guess the potential Warriors series, but ultimately I think the Pau Gasol signing, 2 years, $30 million, is a good value for a guy like that. And with Tim Duncan there, I mean, he can kind of carry some load offensively. He's not going to be the defensive marvel that Duncan is, or the leader that Duncan was, but I think it's a good start.
Yeah, how do you think he'll fare well with LaMarcus on the court?
Offensively, they're going to be great. Defensively is where it's going to be a problem. Like, I can't see both of them playing on the floor at the same time against the Warriors when they have their death lineup or whatever they're going to call it next year. Like,
yeah, everyone will have their death lineup. Their own version.
I don't know. You're going to have one of them on the floor because they can't protect the rim. They can't switch on the smart guys and do it. They can't do what big men in the NBA are required to do now. So that's the worry. But if you simplify it in the regular season, I think they'll be great against certain matchups. They'll be great offensively. I think they'll be a little bit of a awkward fit there, but I think it'll work eventually because they can both hit the mid-range J. So I think they'll be fine. I think there's just going to be a lot of warts and growing pains to kind of sort out throughout the year.
Well, yeah, it takes some time he just signed, right? So I mean, yeah, we got some time there.
How do you think Kawhi Leonard now? What's next for him? I've said this a few times on our podcast, that I think he might be the MVP next year. But now that Kevin Durant went to Golden State, I think Westbrook is in that conversation. I think he can average close to or maybe a triple-double this upcoming season. But where do you see Kawhi taking his game now that Duncan is retired? Do you think he takes more of a leadership role? Obviously, he's already been a Finals MVP, a two-time Defensive Player of the Year. What's next for Kawhi with the Spurs?
What's next for Kawhi? I mean, this is officially, now that Duncan's retired, I mean, new era is kind of, it's the Kawhi era. It's officially his team. And this is the season that I'm watching because where the Spurs go, I don't think they're going to reach the 67 wins that they reached last year because that's just a ridiculous number, a franchise record. But if they're going to stay in the 55 to 65 win range or wherever they may be, Kawhi Leonard needs to be a top three MVP candidate. And he was second last year. We forget that. But he needs to be more than he was because, as the playoffs showed against the Thunder, he was uneven. He seemed to be, not disappear for some games, but he didn't seem to have that little, like, last killer instinct that you would like. So I think where I want to see Kawhi Leonard is that. Also develop his shot creator. Like, he can score on his own. He's very efficient. He can shoot the three. He can do everything. But him, like, finding open guys has not necessarily been an elite strength. And when you talk to people who don't watch Kawhi, they look at his low assist total, and I want to see that creep up. And just all around, just dominate the game in a way that I think he can't because he's only 25 years old.
Now, up here in Canada last week, we were watching the FIBA qualifying tournament. And it was Canada versus France for the winner. And you know who was there killing us? Your boy Parker. Now, how important is Parker to this team going forward next year, especially going off of the FIBA now, going into the Olympics? Is that troublesome for you? Do you wish you kind of took the Olympics off and getting ready for the Spurs season going forward?
Selfishly, I wish he did take it off. I know how important playing for their countries are, so you can't really knock Parker, Mills, Manu, Gasol for representing their countries. But
right.
This is going to be what I'm calling the season of transition for the Spurs. It's going to be transitioning away from Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili to Kawhi, but I think their role is going to be down. And as you saw, Tony Parker, he hasn't been the Tony Parker of old, and he's been slow. He's been a liability on defense. And Spurs fans are really frustrated with him throughout the year. So I don't really know what to expect from Tony Parker. If he can just not be what he was last year, because if you look at all the advanced metrics, they all hate Tony Parker across the board.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting to see if he can kind of just be enough. Because I think the backcourt depth, you look at it, Danny Green's fantastic. Patty Mills is okay in his role. But it's just worrisome when you go against the better teams. And I think Tony Parker needs to go back to his old self. And frankly, I don't know if he can.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Me too. Tony Parker is kind of on the decline. There's going to be some questions there for the point guard position moving forward with San Antonio. I don't think Patty Mills is the answer either. He's a solid backup. Obviously, can hit the three and play, and he plays hard. A couple questions before we let you go. Where do you think the Spurs finish in the Western Conference? I think they're still a top team. I think second maybe behind the Warriors would be my guess. But I think they can challenge them. I think the Warriors are going to face some trouble, obviously, with all the whole NBA being against them. But where do you see the Spurs finishing off this upcoming season?
I'm with you there. If I had to project it today in July, I would say the Spurs would finish second. But the Clippers, I'm never going to count a team with Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin. That's a core that could be, regardless of whatever they have around them and whether they can't even play defense, I think that's going to be a team that could move to second. And another team, too, a dark horse, Utah Jazz.
Yep,
I think they're going to creep up there. I mean, there are a lot of unknowns, but I like what they did. They added Boris Diaw, and as Spurs fans know, if he's motivated, he's a really valuable player. Joe Johnson could be a nice little off-the-bounce punch off the bench. I like what they do. They're young. They're hungry. I think they could potentially go up to two. I don't think they're ready yet, but that's just a team that could make it if everything goes right. But as of right now, I think the Spurs are number two.
Yeah, I like the Jazz. I think maybe 4 or 5 in the Western Conference. They missed out last year by a game over to Houston to creep up in that eighth spot. And I think they would have gave more of a challenge, obviously, than Houston to the Warriors. But now going from no playoffs to probably a top five team in the West is going to be huge for them. They do have a young core, as you mentioned. One last question. We're speaking with Kisam Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock here on 3 in the Key. We like to ask our guests down south of the border because we are north of the border.
We are the north?
Yeah.
They the north?
We
the other north?
They the south. What do you think about the Raptors and what they've done in the last couple of years? Obviously a franchise record in wins this past season all the way to the East Finals and took two away from the Cavs, the only team to beat the Cavs in the East. What's your take on the Raptors?
Raptors fans should be proud of the develop they've made, and they have a great backcourt with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. Valanciunas, I'm not exactly sure about, but he seems to be great.
No one knows about him, really. We're all not sure. He's got so much upside, but we don't know when it's going to happen.
I enjoyed watching Toronto last year. I mean, they're a team that Kyle Lowry is one of the underrated superstars in the league, and I call him a superstar because he is great. He can do everything. I think he's fantastic. I don't know how I feel about DeMar DeRozan. He is what he is. He's inefficient. I think he's great for the Raptors. I just don't know if he can get better from here. The thing with the Raptors that I feel is that I think they reached their ceiling. I think the Eastern Conference Finals is exactly where they're going to be. And honestly, that's a fine ceiling if you're a Raptors fan or if you're an NBA fan. Like, if you can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, push LeBron to 6 games, maybe you get a couple lucky breaks and then maybe make the finals in a couple of years. I mean, that's a good feeling to be. What do y'all think about the Raptors? Do you have hope for the future, or do you think they're kind of in this little range where they're at right now.
I still think maybe they're missing something. Sullinger, I think, is a good bonus for a year for 5.6 or 6 million they got him for. I think he'll help. I still think their weakness is at the four.
Yeah.
Terrence Ross hasn't really developed into what they thought he would be. He is a solid three-point shooter. He can defend, but he's another guy that, you know, when he's motivated and he's playing very well, he's really good. DeRozan, obviously with the cap spiking up, every player in the NBA is going to get paid. I think it's a little too much for a guy who can't really shoot the three, and he's okay defensively. But he comes out every night, and he is a two-time All-Star, and that backcourt, once they are on point, they're, you know, one of the top backcourts in the NBA with the Curry and the Thompson and one Wall and Bradley Beal are healthy, Lillard and McCollum. I think they're up there in terms of backcourts when they got it going. But yeah, East Finals, the first time ever for the Raptors, so it is good to look ahead to. I still think they're missing something, but I think they have a great president in GM and Masai, so
I just think
the
team,
future is bright.
I think the teams out East got better. Like, I think Boston got better. I think the Pacers got better, you know, and I think the Raptors will still make the playoffs, but I think it will be in a 4 or 5 spot rather than that second spot, and I think they'll maybe get around, but again, I can't see that. Like, this is the best they've done in a long time, and I honestly feel like they were overachieving at that point, but it's I mean, those games in the playoffs, they just edged, right? I mean, they were in overtime and such. So I think they had their season, you know, and now it's to work around that. And I think Sully will be okay for them. I think they've got to get him on the Kyle Lowry diet, maybe. I think they'll be good.
They're in a tricky situation because they've reached a point where, like, how do you realistically get better and compete against LeBron? Because that's how you got to go to. So do you, like, throw everything away and try to develop again and rebuild? I don't think that's the route. I think you just got to run it back and keep adding pieces and keep getting better.
Yep.
Smart management brings in, build around Lowry and DeRozan and hope something. I mean, you never know in the playoffs. There could be something that breaks their way. The matchup I'm looking forward to, if it happens, would be Raptors-Celtics in the playoff series. I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing. And also last year, to be fair to the Raptors, Damari Carroll missed a whole bunch of games, over half the season.
Huge. Yeah.
And he was the guy that they added, that they so-called labeled the LeBron stopper because LeBron struggled against him when they played the Hawks and whatnot. I don't believe that. I don't think anyone could really stop LeBron. I think maybe
Iggy, they thought Iggy could.
Yeah, I think you can maybe manage him and make him take a few bad shots, but I don't think really there's anyone in this league that can go out there and stop him. Maybe Kawhi, actually. I think Kawhi comes the closest to it.
Maybe LeBron himself only.
Yeah, but
probably LeBron himself.
Yeah, but I think if you had to put anyone, it'd probably be Kawhi, Iggy, that in that first finals they played against each other. But I think Damari Carroll, if he's healthy, and they have the starting five that they would probably put out is Valanciunas, Sullinger, Damari Carroll, DeRozan, and Lowry. If they can get at least a 70 games with that starting five, and with your bench, you know,
Ross.
Jacob Poeltl, a rookie who should be all right. Ross Powell. Off the bench, Norman
Corey
Powell,
Joseph.
Corey Joseph, who's been big for the Raptors, leading that second unit. Obviously, you know a lot about him.
Yeah.
Was good in Canada, too.
Yeah, he led the Canadian team, and obviously, yeah, you know about him from his time with San Antonio. So I think they do have a good bench, and I think that'll be a big role, a big bonus for them in this season. I don't think they need to play DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. There'll be some games where they'll play them a lot of minutes, but I think the bench will help out a lot.
Yeah. Definitely.
And that's a 50-win team that could make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I know a lot of NBA fans are like, championship or bust. But that 50-win mark and that Eastern Conference Finals, I know for the city of Toronto and everything, that still means
big.
A lot.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a lot. And it's not just the
progress.
City of Toronto. For Canada, for a country that's growing and with the sport of basketball. So it's good for our whole country, actually. So
yeah. It
is good. Well, thank you to Kisam Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock for joining us on 3 in the Key and making up for our third member this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I made it through 20-plus minutes without crying about Tim Duncan.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, well,
that was
done.
Good. Thanks, man.
Yeah, let me know if you guys want to do like a we can do a Spurs-Raptors podcast only, just exclusively when they play each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always be down for that. It'd be great.
All right, perfect.
All right, thanks, man. You have a good one.
All right, you too.
Welcome back to 3 in the Key.
And great conversation there from Keyson Ramirez of SB Nation's Pounding the Rock. A lot of insight on the Spurs and Duncan, what he's meant to the franchise and the organization and the community.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's amazing actually how much response we've gotten from most of the guys we've interviewed so far about the Raptors. A lot of guys like the Raptors. I don't know if they're kissing our butts a bit.
But I don't think so. I think the Raptors have finally turned that corner in the last couple of years. So right maybe. In the beginning of the 2000s when they had Carter, it was a big thing.
Right. Well,
and then when they traded him for a bag of fruits, it was
Bosch.
Very bad. Yeah. And then Bosch came, and then he was all red. We went to the playoffs a few times.
Yeah.
And then he just left to go join his friends in South Beach.
Yeah.
And so now the Raptors have gone around a little bit through the draft.
I think
Valanciunas, Ross, DeRozan.
Basketball smart guys, they know about the Raptors. I think that's what's good.
Yeah, and we'll see. East Finals, hopefully this year they can do that, or maybe squeak into the finals somehow.
That's right.
Depending on the draw, where they go through in the playoffs and who they have to face and how the season turns out. Still a long way.
Yep.
Season doesn't begin until October. So we have a long way of that, but it's good to see that what our American friends are
thinking
about the Raptors. But that wraps it up for us.
Yes.
Will Macklin.
Thank you.
Elias Hossein. Yeah, as usual. Remember, you can get a hold of us by email at 3thekey@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at 3thekey. Follow on Twitter at BasketPod, on Instagram at The3thekey, and you can listen to each episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, and make sure to rate and review us on iTunes as well. You can check out our website, the number 3thekey.ca. And for Will Macklin, I'm Elias Elzane. Peace.